From deep inside Lambeau Field, here's the names you need to know and the positions that need fixing for the Packers. It's the War Room Podcast.
The Green Bay Packers select Jair Alexander.
Aaron Rodgers, quarterback, California.
The Green Bay Packers select Josh Jackson.
Randall Cobb, wide receiver, Kentucky.
With all the insight you need, it's Ross Uglum alongside Jacob Westendorf and Cody Bauer.
They need multiple guys that can play, but they need a dude, and they don't even have a dude. I mean, that I think is very obvious.
Guys on that staff are older, not innovative, and that's something the Packers look for. They're looking for a modernizing of their offense as their quarterback ages.
You take away him and you look at the safeties on this roster, and it's really a who's who of the bottom of the barrel. Those guys aren't made of to be top tier starters on a defense that's supposed to be competing for championships.
The Green Bay Packers select.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Packers War Room Podcast. We're sorry about the week off, but we're back and ready to rock. I am your host, Ross Uglum of Cheesehead TV, and joining me this week is our full crew. First, Jacob Westendorf. Jacob, how are we doing?
Doing well, ready to talk some wide receivers. Kind of a hot button issue with some of the fan base to see whether or not or how big of a need it really is.
And rejoining the program, Cody Bauer. Cody, how are you on this fine Thursday evening?
I am doing very well. Getting into full draftsman mode as everybody's looking forward to the combine. Ready to talk some wide receivers and a little bit of a kind of what's out there as a potential wide receiver trade rumor. So let's get to it, bud.
Absolutely. We got a jam-packed show for you. We have coming up an interview with Brad Kelly. He is a Division III wide receivers coach, but perhaps more importantly for these purposes, he is a top-notch wide receiver scout. Does an excellent job for the Draft Network, and we're really excited to kind of get his take on this year's class. I had a really, really good conversation with him and very much enjoyed being able to do that for sure. We're going to hit the Packers news, but there isn't much news to hit. Chris Gizzy kind of leapfrogged Mark Lovat. Probably not the wholesale change that a lot of Packers fans were looking for in strength and conditioning, though it does give the team a new voice. And I think, kind of as fans in general, we overrate the effect that crew really has on the frequency of injuries. That really is more constantly compounding bad luck than I think any of us would like to admit. It's rumor season. Gotta love rumor season. It's heating up, and the Packers are a popular Antonio Brown destination. And a lot of talk about Anthony Barr, a lot of talk about Landon Collins, a lot of talk about really the kind of the key guys, I guess, in the spots that, the Packers are at least thought to have a need. Boys, anything really jump out to you? I don't really, there's not much to say, I don't feel like.
Yeah, there's not really a whole lot. I mean, there's just a lot of smoke this time of year. More rumors will swirl once all the teams get together in Indy. And, it's just fun time to speculate because other than that, there's really just not a lot going on football-wise unless you've been able to get attached to the AAF or you know, are full on draft mode, like looking at every prospect kind of guys like we are. But, you know, so it's just kind of a fun time to speculate. And who doesn't like the idea of Antonio Brown across from Davante Adams with Aaron Rodgers? I mean, I'll take that, right?
Yeah, it'd be cool. I mean, it'd be cool. I don't think there's any question about that.
Yeah, I can't really argue with – I mean, obviously, I don't think we're going to get too deep into, like, would we do it or anything or not like that. But just on the surface, I mean, that sounds like a team that we set up when we're playing Madden, right? I mean, you have Davante Adams, who's a top five receiver, and Antonio Brown, who may very well be the best receiver in all of football. And that's something where I can't remember. Somebody from Pittsburgh area, one of the reporters or something, pointed out that Brown is due a – $2.5 million roster bonus on like March 17th or something like that. So that may be the day that you're looking at for a deadline of sorts, if they're going to move Antonio Brown. Now, I'm going to be interested to see, you know, what it is they're going to do. I think, you know, the GM said today they're not just going to give him away, but I think that's more him trying to gain back some leverage, which they don't have when, yeah, when they have the owner and the receiver both saying, oh, we agreed, it's time to move on. Well, you're not keeping him if the owner of the team said, we agree, it's time to move on. So that's going to be interesting to see. Like Cody mentioned, you know, tampering really does start in Indy. So we might hear some stuff about, you know, who the Packers are talking to externally as well as internally, if anybody. So it's almost that time of year, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and a cool little announcement for this show. I've got the opportunity through a media outlet that I participate or that I kind of contribute to. I will be in Indianapolis at the Combine for the first time. So that's going to be an exciting thing for this show. Certainly will be an exciting thing for me personally. I'm going to try my very best to grab a couple of audio snippets that we can splice into the podcast. I think that'd be really cool, especially if I get a chance to chat with some of the top prospects. So that's something to look forward to, and hope, you know, that it ends up being something that we can kind of share with everybody and share with the audience, and not just you know, me with a stopwatch in the stands in Indianapolis. I had a chance, as we mentioned earlier, to speak to Brad Kelly. Brad is with the Draft Network, and his specialty is scouting receivers. This is the Receivers Show. So we hope that you very much enjoy this next about 25 minutes. Fortunate enough to have on Brad Kelly of the Draft Network. Brad, kind of a wide receiver specialist. Also, I believe coaches wide receivers at the collegiate level. So Brad, if you wouldn't mind kind of introducing yourself to our audience and explaining kind of who you are.
Yeah, like you said, I write for thedraftnetwork.com. You can follow that on Twitter at DraftNetworkLLC. We just started the website in August, so this is our first draft cycle. But the guys I write with, and they have tons of experience. We all have, you know, years and years of experience. But we all finally got to come together for TDN, and we're introducing some new user-friendly things. So really, the site's really taken off, and hopefully it's going to continue to build, but that's pretty much the website and the story.
So tell us a little bit about your playing career. I believe your display pick on Twitter is yourself, so it looks like you might have played a little receiver.
I did, yeah. I played at South Bay Regina University, a Division III school in Rhode Island. We had a lot of success. I played receiver, I played some tight end. We were a ranked team 1 year. We had a winning record all four seasons. So we had a lot of fun, you know. That was from 2012 to 2015, and I got right into coaching. I've coached 3 years since then.
Love it. Us Division III guys got to stick together. I played golf at Concordia College in Minnesota.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, you know, the non-scholarship is obviously the big holdup, but there's some good football players now. There's a lot of guys, a lot of Division I FCS transfers, a lot of guys who could have played at higher levels. I mean, the talent there, it's really different, and people just assume Division III is just kind of a joke. It's just absolutely incorrect, especially you play on a good team that's going to be some studs. And, I was not one of them, but I did back up a few of them.
Fair enough. What then went into the transition for yourself into kind of the coaching realm?
Well, I went back to coach the high school that I played at. You know, I grew up in the town of. It was the same coach that I played for when I was a senior. Really just trying to give back, and I was able to coach receivers and you know, expand my knowledge of the position, not only from coaching, but, you know, being put in a position where I could go to clinics and I could do a bunch of research and talk to former receivers and all that type of stuff, and really broaden my horizon and, you know, read books and reach out to Division I coaches and all that type of stuff. And I think that obviously helped, but realistically, I think the biggest thing about coaching high school is you're going to learn who players who really have it and who don't, and the differences between them. And I think when it comes to scouting, being able to coach at that level was invaluable, because you really are able to see the differences just on kids who are still progressing and kids who are really there and are playing at a higher level, and what it takes to go into that, and then you can see that much more easily on film.
So what kind of sparked your passion for the draft? I mean, how did you become somebody that was active on social media or writing and talking about not just receiver play, but, I mean, the draft in general?
Yeah, I was always interested in the draft and you know, the build-up to it and the lead-up to it and watching all the analysis and looking up the analysis online. And I was probably scouting players when I was, like, 14, to be honest. Didn't know what I was doing, but did it throughout college and everything. Just really wanted to be informed. You know, I've always been a guy who's watched a ton of film. And that was when I was in high school of myself, but also NFL and college and all the cut-ups and everything. And realistically, I think once I got done playing, it really took off the film-wise, and the draft was just an easy transition because there's so much accessible film, especially online, and you know, all the cut-ups, and people can condense games down into, you know, 10, 12 minutes, and you can just really burn through prospects at a pretty fast pace. And I think that felt great for me to do, because I felt like I was learning about the players, learning about the prospects, also learning about football in general, the offense, the schemes, the differences in schemes from team to team and coach to coach. And I thought that helped me as a coach. I thought it helped me as a player. I was still trying to play a little bit after college, and I thought it helped me as a scout.
So let's talk about, because this is a receiver show, let's talk about the traits that you really look for. So not necessarily most, but a lot of what I do is scouting pass rushers, and my favorite thing is the ability to bend the edge. That I think most correlates to success at the next level. If you can flatten out and get to the quarterback, that's going to be something that is replicable, something that can be done over and over again, even at the professional level. So when you're scouting receivers, what is it about their play that's like one of the number one, maybe the number one and number two thing that matters to you as you go prospect in, prospect out?
For me, that's all about route running. It's the same idea that you have with bending the edge, and think that one trait is going to be translatable for 8 to 10 years. I think that's what route running is. And that doesn't necessarily have to be the most explosive player. Doesn't have to be the fastest player. But if a guy knows how to threaten leverage, if he knows how to break crisp with a crisp break and you know, define cuts and everything like that, they're going to be able to translate not only right away, but they're going to last in the league. And even as their athleticism decreases a little bit as their career wears on, it's still going to be translatable because you're never going to lose that. So you look at a guy, just to give a quick example this year, maybe a guy like Hunter Renfrow. I'm sure of his floor because I know that he's at least a good route runner. He's going to last in the league for a long time. He's going to produce right away. He's never going to be a top-end wide receiver one, but I do know what his floor is, and that's the number one initial thing that I look for.
So what receiver traits do you think other people that maybe, not necessarily that you don't respect, but people that you find that you maybe disagree with, what are some traits that other folks are really concerned about with receivers that don't matter as much to you?
As weird as this is to say, I think it comes down to hands. Realistically, you look at a guy who has drop concerns. One, I think that's the most fixable issue when it comes to receivers, especially young receivers. You're looking at prospects, guys are 20, 21 years old. Some of them have only been playing football for 4 to 5 years. You know, who picked it up in high school or maybe converted basketball players and that type of stuff. And their hands and their ability to catch the ball is going to come with time. It's going to come with reps. And on top of that, you look at a guy with a good drop rate and a bad drop rate, you're really only talking about maybe the difference between 4 to 5 catches throughout the season. You look at a 16-game season, that's only going to come up once every 4 games. I think that people are going to overrate that trait more so than route running, which is consistent on a play-to-play basis, or even, you know, blocking, which is consistent on, a, you know, 40% of plays in the NFL.
So if you don't mind, we'll kind of dip into the current roster as it stands with Green Bay, and they have an unchallenged you know, first receiver, prime receiver, and that's Devontae Adams, a guy that did have those drop issues in his first and second year, really came on as a third-year guy, and then last year was his fourth year in the league, and was, in my opinion, a bona fide superstar, the guy that produced, whether it was Brett Hundley at quarterback, Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. Where does Devontae Adams kind of rank in your echelon of wide receivers in this league, and what does he do so well?
Well, Packers fans hate me for my Devontae Adams thing because every time I release a list and I put him around 10, I get a bunch of hate. I get a bunch of people saying I'm too low on Devontae Adams. I'll be him more than anybody else, to be honest. But the thing is, I put him at 10, I put him at 9, and I'm saying I really, really like him. It's just, I don't think he's, you know, a top five receiver, and that's not, you know, there's only five of those guys, and I think those spots are kind of reserved for players who I know are special guys like a Julio Jones or an Antonio Brown. But I really like Devontae Adams' game. For a guy who has good size, he's pretty long in the legs, but he's very crisp. He's very explosive. Despite the fact that he's a little bit bulkier, he's listed at 215 pounds, but he moves like he's maybe only 200, 195. And that's really when it comes down to his cut. You know, on the horizontal, when he cuts horizontally or across the field, he does a great job of working when Rodgers extends the play, and that great rapport with him, and really his ability to anticipate coverages, work against those coverages. You see him working against press, and you can just tell he knows exactly when that corner is going to try to jam him up. And it's beautiful the way it's an art form, the way he knows when it's coming, and he can just kind of discard it and get into his route. So those are the type of things that he has that rapport. He works well out of structure. He anticipates coverages very well. And then he has those explosive cuts, and it really works together for guys in an all-around game.
Yeah, his release is something else. And I'm one of them too, but I get where you're coming from. The league has, being an 11 personnel league, to be honest with you, it has 96 starting receivers. And so for Devontae to be 10th is pretty impressive stuff, and maybe not something where to quibble that I should be 4th, 5th, 6th, whatever. I get that. I think, you know, you and I both agree that it's likely that the Green Bay Packers are going to move on from Randall Cobb this offseason. Where he's going to want to be paid is probably somewhere somebody else is going to want to pay him. And that leaves the receiver group to Geronimo Allison, but then more importantly to last year's draft class kids. And I believe you wrote something on these guys. Those guys, of course, being Jamon Moore, the first selection, and then it was Marquez Valdez-Scantling, followed by Equanimeous St. Brown. That pecking order during the season certainly got shifted, as MVS was clearly the top option for the squad from those three guys. And then down to Equanimeous, who had a huge catch against the 49ers in that Monday Night Football win. And then Jamon Moore, who just could not kind of get it going. Talk to me a little bit about these three guys, where you see them, you know, possibly getting to in an offense that would be considered a successful NFL offense.
Well, when it comes to those three guys, and I guess I'm going to throw in Alan Lazard, who they picked up late in the season, they obviously had a type when they were targeting receivers last year. I mean, all four of those guys are 6'3 or taller, and all of them are over 200 pounds. They were looking for some size. But when it came to that side too, I mean, you look at Valdez Scantling having a successful rookie season, but he's also 2 years older than Equanimeous St. Brown. So it's kind of one of those things where he should have been more pro ready, and he definitely was. But I still think St. Brown probably has the higher ceiling just because he has that body type, but also that superior athleticism that he really showed at the NFL Combine. When it comes to them, I think realistically those four guys are really kind of fighting for that other starting spot across from Devontae Adams. I would think that Scantling, with his performance as a rookie, is the leader in the clubhouse at the moment, but I wouldn't put it past St. Brown to kind of take over as it goes. And he's still only 22 years old. As a guy who has a serious ceiling, I thought that he was a very loose, very flexible athlete despite his size. He actually put on weight between the season and the combine and still looked really fluid at the combine. Great athlete, has great genes. That's the guy who I would look out for and say, you know, in the future, this could be a guy who could be a legitimate wide receiver too across from Devontae Adams.
All right, let's move forward to the 2019 class. And I just, you know, this is not a group, I think, where we have
like the number one guy. Julio Jones comes to mind as the clear number one of that class. And we've had classes in the past where you've known who the first receiver that's going to come off the board. I think people had that feeling about Sammy Watkins as well, even though he was in the same class as Odell and Devontae. It was pretty clear he was going to be, you know, wide receiver one. I don't feel that with this class. So you, as definitely an educated mind on the receiver side of things, who is the top receiver in this class?
Well, like you said, it's kind of interesting because you look at a guy or a class particularly like Julio Jones' class, he was with A.J. Green. So you look at some classes and they have two or three or four guys who you think these players could be a top five receiver in the NFL. And then some classes, like last year's class, you know, I had Dante Pettis at the top, other guys like DJ Moore and Anthony Miller coming really close behind, but I really didn't think the ceiling for any of them was even a top 10 receiver in the league. So it definitely fluctuates, but when it comes to this class, I think there's one, and I think there's one standout, and then one guy a little bit beneath him, and then there's a pretty relative drop-off. And that top guy is DK Metcalf out of Ole Miss. I mean, I'm sure people have seen the picture of him on Twitter at the Exos training facility in Florida where he is right now preparing for the combine. Legitimately looks like the Incredible Hulk in the photo. 6'4", this is at 230. I'd be surprised if he is not 235 by the time the combine rolls around, but also someone who I think is going to flirt with the 4.4s, at least running the low 4.5s. I mean, he has all the athleticism, the size, speed, strength that you could possibly want in a receiver. But on top of that, he's a high-point guy. He has some nuance in his footwork. He's very good against press coverage. Really, absolutely just dominates it. The high point is there. And then also, at the very end of the catch point, there's also some refinement, how he kind of uses his hands, create that late separation, can win above the rim. I mean, this is a guy who is the closest projection to a wide receiver one in the class. And I think the next guy beneath him is Kelvin Harmon from NC State. Similarly sized, a little bit smaller, looks at 6'3", 214, but has those similar traits, very consistent route runner, really good at creating throwing windows, not necessarily having this, you know, huge broad range of separation, but a guy who's just consistently running crisp routes, running good routes, good speed, and a guy who's going to create windows on a play-to-play basis, and then you add in the size and strength. He has a really good my ball attitude as well, and he'll go up and get it, do contact and everything too. I think those are the clear top two in that. I think after that, there is a ledge of drop off before you get into the next group.
So once you get into that next group and you've gotten to the ledge, is it a deep class? I mean, is it something where you're going to feel all right with the guys that you take starting in round two, maybe through, you know, pick 100, pick 120? Is there depth in this class, guys that can maybe not be your number one, but would be a complimentary guy to Devontae Adams and give the guys that are there now competition? Or certainly, as you could see with the Shanahan offense and the LaFleur offense, a slot guy to replace Randall Cobb?
I think there is a ton of depth in this class. I honestly say that looking at how I anticipate my grades finishing up, I would have, last season, my wide receiver 10 was DJ Chark from LSU, and now he's in the Jacksonville Jaguars. I look at my receiver 17 right now, and it's Jacoby Myers from NC State. And this is just kind of my broad, initial feeling about the class. I have not done official grades yet on a lot of these guys, but I think Myers is better than Chark coming out. So I think we're looking at 17, 20 guys who I like better than the 10th guy last year. And there's a lot of different flavors between guys. There's a lot of size, long guys. There's Antoine Westby from Texas Tech and Arcega Whiteside from Stanford and Keen Butler from Iowa State. And those are guys who are big, tall, long, high-point guys. But then on the opposite end of the spectrum, there's other guys who are the small, quick, you know, slot receiver types, and there's everything else in between as well. So I think the depth of the class is awesome. I'm looking at maybe 30 guys who I think will finish with round 4 or 5 grades or better. And usually only about 34 to 35 receivers get drafted per year. Now, I'm just through the fifth round, so I think the depth is awesome. As far as guys to replace Cobb, which I think the Packers are going to do now, they have Adams as the number one, bona fide number one receiver. They have a lot of size on the roster in their youth. They're going to look at a guy, like you said, to replace Cobb, maybe a shorter guy, but a quicker guy, can operate a lot in the slot, good with the ball in his hands, and those type of receivers in this class You got to look at Deebo Samuel from South Carolina. I loved his game. I was at the Senior Bowl in Mobile a couple weeks ago, and he was just tearing it up. And I loved his film before that, too. And he's built very well. He's actually rated at 216. He told me he likes to play at about 210. So realistically, he's even going to have to cut a few pounds. But just a shade under 6 feet, really great runner, explosive. I mean, you look at his junior year tape, he only played 3 games. Before an injury ended his season, he had 17 touches a year, like 6 touchdowns. I mean, the guy was special with the ball in his hand, strong hands, strong body. He would be my top choice, but there's a ton of other depth too. Guys like Marquise Brown from Oklahoma, who could play in the slot, and Nicole Hardman from Georgia, similar player to Brown, maybe on a little bit less of an ability basis, but there's a ton of depth, and you can look at guys in the third round and say, you know, this guy can come in and replace Todd right now.
Who's your bang the table guy? Not necessarily. I mean, obviously, you know, you've talked about Metcalf and stuff, but I'm not necessarily talking about the top of the class. Who is one of these mid round guys that somebody else is going to have ranked at 20, and you're going to have at 12? And it doesn't necessarily have to be that exactly, but I think you understand my meaning.
Yeah, that's going to be Terry McLaurin from Ohio State. Watching his film and at Ohio State, they obviously had a ton of talent on the offense. And that's in the quarterback in Dwayne Haskins, that's in the running back in Mike Weber, and that's also in all of the receivers that they had. And despite the fact that Haskins threw for, you know, thousands and thousands of yards, in a way, having all that talent makes everybody on the offense underutilized. And I think McLaurin was probably the main guy who was a victim of that. Despite only having less than 40 receptions, he had over 700 yards and 11 touchdowns. I mean, that shows you his explosive playmaking ability. And then he goes down to Mobile and was just turning corners around, you know, left and right at the Senior Bowl during practices. I mean, one of the best route runners there, probably the person who completely exceeded expectations among the receiver group, him and maybe Penny Hart from Georgia State. But McLaurin is a guy who's great against press coverage. He's great on special teams. He's just an all-around player. Can win at all levels of the field. Strong hand. Good size. Well built. You know, not a huge guy, just a little bit over 6 feet, but a very well built athlete. Explosive athlete. I mean, he's been timed on fast times. He's been measured at a high vertical jump. So just a guy who I think is an all-around player. And a guy who's going to help on all four downs and be a starter in this league for a long time. Actually, he reminds me a lot of Nate Burleson. When he was a player, for those who remember him as a player, not an NFL Network analyst, but I think a guy's going to stick around for a long time and be a productive, you know, wide receiver too for many years.
So, of course, let's go the other way then. Who is somebody going to have ranked sixth that you're going to be 18, 19? Like, don't. For me, it was, to be honest with you, it was Chark last year. That was my guy. I got into a lot of Twitter fights about how much I didn't particularly care for Chark. And who is your bust watch candidate in the receiver group this year?
I would say David Sills from West Virginia. As much as I've tried to like David Sills' tape, and actually, once again, I spoke with him at the Senior Bowl, and I liked him as a person, as a kid. And, you know, I thought it was, you know, respectful, well-spoken, and you could tell he works hard. I mean, he's put on weight since what he was listed at West Virginia. He's improved his game on film from his junior to his senior year, but it's just a guy that I don't quite see the athleticism working out for him. And despite the fact that he has good body control, he has good hands, and he can high-point passes, his explosiveness is not there for someone who has as skinny as he is. So I think there's some concerns in the fact that he's a little bit more susceptible to contact because he's a little bit more thin, and I don't know if he's going to win above the rim. I don't know if he can really climb that ladder in the NFL and win over NFL corners, how he did in the Big 12. So I think that Stills is going to be a guy who I'm going to be a little bit lower on. Some people will like him. He's a good red zone presence. He has a lot of good production over the last 2 seasons, but just a guy that I don't quite see it with. I actually think I will end up preferring his teammate, Gary Jennings, to him as far as my draft rankings go. So I would say it's Stills. You know, just, I want to like him. I like him as a person. I just don't quite see his NFL traits working out.
So if you want to, or maybe you don't, talk me into my bust watch guy, which would be N'Keal Harry.
So I'm lukewarm on N'Keal. The thing about guys like N'Keal Harry, and I think that he's not a great separator. Actually, I know he's not a great separator, but his really his calling card is his ability to rise up. You know, his allegedly his vertical jump's going to be in the 40s. We'll see about that at the combine. But a guy who can win those contested catches because of his ability to go up and get it and win through contact. Now, some of those guys who play that type of game are bust in the NFL, such as Vaughn Treadwell from Minnesota. But I think what separates Harry is he does have a trump card. He has one special trait, and that trait is his ability with the ball in his hands. He is unnaturally good as a ball carrier for his size, for his build, and everything like that. You can see it when they throw him screen passes. You can see it when he's a puck returner, and he's 220 pounds, which is just not normal. So I think at the very least, I know that N'Keal Harry is going to be good in at least one thing as a rookie. And the rest of this game hopefully will come and progress as it goes. But he's going to be able to win contested spots. We'll see how often that happens, but I know at the very least he's going to be a menace to bring down. He's a chore to bring down for defensive backs, and that will at least be his role initially in the NFL.
So last question here. Who do you really think is going to pop off at the combine? Whose numbers, whether it be you're excited for a vert or you're excited for a 40, who is really exciting you at the combine from this class?
I think that I just mentioned him. I think Gary Jennings Jr. from West Virginia is going to run very well, like a low 4.4, 40, and he's around 210, 212 pounds, if I'm not mistaken. So that's the guy who has plenty of juice, and you can see his long speed. And whenever someone gave him a free release at Mobile, it was game over. He was getting by him. There's a few other guys that I think will be particularly good at certain events. A guy like Andy Isabella and Marquise Brown and Miko Hardman will be good at that 40-yard dash. But I'm pretty excited to see Emmanuel Hall from Missouri, mostly because he got hurt about halfway through the season, declared anyway, and he's kind of quiet because he doesn't have a ton of production, and he has the injury. But this is a guy who, when you watch him play, his long speed's there, definitely there. But his break, especially on those like curls and comebacks, and you have to turn his body around, are just a blur. I mean, defensive backs lose him constantly on that. Now, he has a lot of raw aspects to his game, but you talk about a guy who can change direction, he is it. So in the three-cone drill and the short shuttle, those type of events, he's going to really tear it up, I think. And that's a guy who's over 6 feet tall. He's pretty long, too. And he has that unnatural change of direction. I'm excited to see what kind of times he posts and exactly how heavy he is.
All right. Thanks, Brad. We really appreciate the time.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me.
And we want to thank Brad for his time. He's a busy guy. Shoot, this time of the year, we're all busy, guys. There's no question about it. And that was a really interesting, discussion. I thought that his process was cool. I liked the way that he answered the question that I asked about, what did he think was an overrated trait and what was his number one trait. I think that those are some things that, we're just kind of trying to make everybody that listens to this just a little bit smarter about football, and I definitely got a little bit smarter about football listening to Brad. So let's talk about some guys that maybe, or let's have some guys that maybe don't know quite as much about wide receiver play break down this year's class. As you guys know, we have kind of the same look. We're going to be talking about those first six picks in the first four rounds in general. So what round, guys, are you looking for a wide receiver? We can start with Jake.
Yeah, I mean, obviously a lot's going to depend on how the board falls or something like that. But, I mean, you could talk me into a receiver as soon as pick number 30 in the first round. Now, Ross, you mentioned maybe that would be for Antonio Brown on Twitter recently. But, if they don't trade that pick, obviously, then, I mean, somebody like, DK Metcalf is sitting there and say all the pass rushers are gone and Dalton Risner's gone. And, they think they could get a tight end at 44 or something like that if all three guys are still there, which I doubt as of right now is something that happens, but it is possible. You can talk me into it as soon as 30. I don't necessarily love the value there because I think there's so many receivers that are just kind of in the same sort of. There isn't a guy in this draft like Julio Jones or Amari Cooper or anybody like that. It's DK Metcalf is probably who's going to be on the top of a lot of boards. He's on the top of mine as of right now, assuming his neck injury checks out. But other than that, there's so many guys who you just look at and I'm not sure how big of a difference there is. Like, is it better to take a receiver early, or, you know, the opportunity cost of picking one in the, maybe the third round or the second or third round that could provide kind of the same production but at less of a draft capital for you? So I would say you could start me at 30, but I would be more comfortable if we started at 44.
I think that's where I am as well. 44 is kind of where I'd like to start. The only thing for me is if Metcalf's there at 30, I would take him. I think that the true upside of a number one wide receiver, you know, a guy that could be the 10th, 12th, 14th best guy in the league, you think Devontae Adams is a top five guy, you know, you really get that two number ones kind of thing that basically the Vikings have going on right now. But you've got it with outside receivers as opposed to slot guys like Diggs and Thielen. So I think that would sort of be where I would draw the line. But I would definitely prefer 12 and 30 to be at a different spot. I would like to give the three kids from last year one more year, and probably would like to address the defensive side of the ball or the tight end position or maybe the offensive guard position at 12 and 30 as opposed to, you know, firing off with one of those. I'll be pretty upset, frankly, if 12 is a wide receiver, unless DK just has the world's most ridiculous combine. Cody, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking kind of right along the same lines as you guys. I could be talked into DK possibly even at 12, and I know kind of how we all go. We eventually get talked into just about whoever the pick is. You know, we do raise some doubt, I suppose, but, you know, the certain guys have to be at those spots. If DK is there at 30, Metcalf, I think that's a sprint to the podium type situation. I think that would be tremendous value. And, you know, the picture has been circulating, but I know that he's been an absolute workout warrior, you know, a freak athlete his entire life. So it's going to be interesting to see what he does at the combine. But, you know, a very raw route runner and doesn't have a ton of production. But that's why, you know, there's still potential that he could be there at 30. But I have a feeling after the combine, that's going to be a long gone hope. But, you know, looking at 44, I think you could find some value on a lot of guys. And, you know, the combine's going to be big to separate some of the guys even at the top. So, depending on how that breaks down, there's certainly a lot of guys that would be, you know, decent value around that 44, you know, spot. And, you know, I think even enough guys are going to end up, you know, trickling down into the third and fourth round. So I don't think there's any need to, you know, think, oh my gosh, we got to get this slot guy, you know, otherwise there's not going to be any options later on. Where in this draft, I actually think there are some, you know, decent options. You have to outweigh what else is there at other positions. So, you know, we could always all be talked into certain things. So, yeah, at 30, definitely with a few players, and but more so at 44, I think we're going to start looking for value.
Yeah, and so I'll go over some of the guys that will be around at 44. N'Keal Harry is someone that has been mocked to the Packers at 30 before. I'll get to N'Keal later. He'll be one of my category guys. Marquise Brown, I think, with the Lisfranc injury, is both A, terrifying, and B, potentially an incredible value at a place like 44. Kelvin Harmon of NC State is a Jordy Nelson clone that would maybe potentially be around at 44. And then your Riley Ridleys, your Debo Samuels, your A.J. Browns, kind of your slot-style guys, although I think Ridley could play outside. Those are also going to be your, you know, kind of dudes in that area. This is a very deep receiving class, in my opinion. My favorite guy, though, for that would be Debo Samuel. I think you get a plus version. I think you have a guy that can do the Randall Cobb thing, but do it at an even higher level than Cobb ever did. I think that Samuel's ceiling is above Randall's ceiling. And Randall's ceiling, I think if you take a look at his sophomore year, was pretty prodigious. I mean, Randall Cobb, it was either his second or third year in the league, but I think it was his second year in the league. He was the premier slot receiver in football, and I don't think there was any question about it. He was absolutely dominant from that spot, and over and over and over again achieved and was a top target for Aaron Rodgers, no question about it. Jacob, who's your favorite guy in that second round where the Packers would traditionally take a receiver like a Devontae, like a Jennings, like a Nelson. Who's your second round Ted Thompson special?
Yeah, you mentioned Deebo Samuel. First of all, I think the most important part is he's named after the character in Friday, so that's got to be extra points, if nothing else. For that guy, you mentioned Randall Cobb's ceiling. I mean, yeah, you look at 2012, Cobb had 80 catches, would have had over 1,000 yards there had he not missed the last game with an injury. And then you've got 2014, which was his career season. And really, I mean, as important as Jordy Nelson was to that Packers offense, Cobb was just as important to that group. You look at the big plays, for example. I mean, Cobb caught the only touchdown that Green Bay scored in that NFC title game. He made the big catch against Dallas to seal that game. He made the big catch against the Patriots to seal that game. And you mentioned a higher ceiling. That's got me even more excited about him than I already was, because that's the guy who we're looking at there. You mentioned a plus slot receiver. You look at, I can very easily envision a Packers receiving core next season with Devontae, one of those three rookies like you mentioned, and one of those two rookies. I'm not as sure about Jamon Moore as the other guys, especially after his rookie season. I don't want to give up on him, but the other guys are definitely ahead of the curve. So whether that's MBS or EQ, and then you have Deebo Samuel kind of patrolling the slot there and just doing the things he's supposed to do. He's so sudden in and out of his breaks. I don't mean to echo all of your sentiments, but I mean, he's a favorite by the Packers fan base, and he absolutely should be.
Cody, what are you thinking as far as your favorite, like I said, Packers special second round receiver? What are you thinking?
Well, I mean, there's certainly those slack guys you mentioned, in particular Deebo. He would be on my list of somebody I would look at. You mentioned Randall Cobb, and that's exactly the vibe you get. Probably, you know, if guys don't remember correctly, Randall Cobb didn't test all that well at the combine either. And eventually, you know, after a couple of injuries and got beat up and had a hard time staying healthy. I'm not necessarily saying that'll happen to Deebo, but you just got to be cautious about that kind of thing. I don't know if you're picking at 44, and there's some guys out there who have the potential, you know, the future to profile as a prolific number one, and they're out there. I think you got to look to one of those guys, and that's Kelvin Harmon. Yeah, that's Hakeem Butler out of Iowa State. That's N'Keal Harry, Riley Ridley. Even a guy like J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, that might be a little bit early for him. But, you know, there's a lot of guys, you know, around that range. And I think after the combine, we'll prove that. So I'm not so sure, you know, that there's not so many guys that you take one. That's why I said waiting might not be a bad deal. But for me, I'd look to one of those guys that down the road can, you know, become a Devontae Adams or an Antonio Brown or a number one on your team, where Deebo, sure, he's a great slot player, but what is that truly worth? You know, towards the end of Cobb's career, we're all kind of wondering if he's overpaid. And I don't know, slot receivers are just kind of in a different ball game, where I don't know if you want to invest a pick 44 into one, particularly in this draft where there's some other options that could be had in the middle round. So
the slot receiver thing specifically for this is, well, I mean, it's the spot for this this new offense, the Shanahan-style offense that LaFleur is likely going to run. In my opinion, it's just a situation where these guys are starters, these slot receivers. So if that's where Deebo fits, I like the JJAW thing, though. I think JJAW is the power forward. You always talk about your receiving corps being a basketball team. The Packers don't really have a power forward. They got a bunch of wings. I think EQ would be the closest that they have to the power forward, but even he really doesn't box guys out and win red zone battles all the time. And that's what you would have with JJAW from Stanford, something that really isn't part of the program now. He would, though, as you mentioned, I think he would top out as a really, really good number two receiver. I don't think you could ever really run your offense through him in the same way that you couldn't, you know, necessarily run your offense through a guy like Deebo Samuel. Cody, who is the most undervalued receiver in this class?
I'm going to have to go to one of my earliest draft crushes out of North Carolina, Anthony Radcliffe-Williams. He's even a combine snub, but out of North Carolina. And Ross, I know you're like this. He's a future, he's a former quarterback, and now he converted to wide receiver. And, you know, sure, he does some things that aren't exactly ideal, a little raw route running, but, you know, his ability to go and get the football and just make everything look so effortless is crazy for somebody who's just transferred that position. So, you know, the NFL is, you know, they do speak loudly, and it does carry some weight to me that he didn't get invited. So, you know, maybe on day three you can get that kind of player. And, you know what, I know he played primarily on the outside in North Carolina. I think despite being, you know, over 6 foot and 200 plus, like kind of like a Debo, he'd be a thicker slot guy. I think you can kick him inside and let him flourish because he is also pretty good after the catch. So I think right now that's one guy who stands out to me as being pretty undervalued, getting snubbed.
I'll tell you another guy that I really think is a top 10 player in this class, but most of the places that you look does not share that thought. And that's Antoine Wesley from Texas Tech. And I think receivers sometimes get a rough reputation, as frankly do their quarterbacks, when they're in a spread system like Kingsbury's. But he's got some pretty crazy ability to change direction in the route. And also, his ball skills are incredible. The way that he tracks the football is just top-notch. College production's a concern. I don't think there's really any question about that. But, man, you talk about the power forward that I was, you know, requesting. 6'5", 200 pounds. Probably should have gone back to school, but maybe you give him a red shirt year, just use him in a couple of goal line packages, and then he's ready to rock in 2020. A guy, if he's wide receiver 12, wide receiver 13, you know, you're talking about a fourth-round pick there. Maybe you snag him, and because he's a redshirt, you just use that extra Washington pick. Who knows? Jacob, most undervalued player at the wide receiver position in this class.
Yeah, I'm going to go Ole Miss. I don't know how they didn't average 40 points a game. Now, I know Metcalf missed some time, obviously, with the injury. A.J. Brown is a highly talked-about player. But I was watching DeMarcus Lodge a bunch last week, and I think he has the ability to play anywhere in the offense. You probably don't want to plug him outside too much, but it's somewhere he can win out there if he needs to. He's fast enough. He's got strong hands and attacks the football. I really like to see that in a receiver. Something I do want to see is I don't want a guy who waits for the ball to get to him, and I don't want to see a guy who lets the ball get into his body. Those are kind of the two things that I look for initially in a wide receiver. And I think Lodge does both of those things really well. And it doesn't look like a lot of people seem to share the same opinion as I do. That's another guy who I think could be a late second, early third round pick. Most of the mocks that I'm reading have him, you know, day three, probably the fourth round, maybe the fifth round. This is a guy who I really like him. And I think that, like I mentioned, you know, maybe it's because he was essentially the third fiddle in Ole Miss's offense, but I really think he's a good player that could be a steal for somebody that waits on him a little bit, or, you know, is able to get him, again, like I mentioned, in the late second, early third.
Let's go to the bust watch. I'm going to start, and it's actually a guy that Cody mentioned. If you want to talk about potential number one receivers, man, I do not see it with N'Keal Harry. I don't. I think he's got Laquon Treadwell disease. He's even more special than Treadwell was after the catch at Ole Miss, but has the same exact issues as far as a real difficulty to create separation. And the defensive backs in the National Football League are just too good at the catch point to consistently rely on winning contested catches. Now, of course, you could get him, you know, you can get him the ball in the tunnel screen game. You could throw him slants against off coverage. You could hand it to him like New England does with Cordarrelle Patterson. But I'm just not interested in that if I'm going to have to take N'Keal Harry, where I think you have to take N'Keal Harry. And you have to do that because he's got these wild-ass highlight plays you know, reversing field, making guys miss. I just don't think the reality of the situation is that you're going to be able to get that out of him in the National Football League. I think he's probably going to struggle more than most people realize. Cody, you can either defend your boy or bring me to Busk Watch.
Oh, he's not really my boy. He was just an option of, you know, like a guy who's going to go around that target at 44. I'm not too interested in Akil here. I share some of those concerns of, you know, inability to separate. And, you know, a lot of his after the catch, you know, great highlight plays generally won't fly in the NFL. The guys are just too fast for him to circle back around the field like he did in some of those highlights. So for me, I guess I don't really have a good guy to bus watch. I would say be cautious with a guy like Marquise Brown. Obviously a good athlete and a fun, explosive player. However, there are some limitations due to his size. I think you wonder about him playing against some bigger corners in the NFL. And then also, you know, with a Liz Frank injury, that's no joke. Like you mentioned earlier, I think that the medical is going to be important for him. So that's just someone I would be cautious with, and that any team takes better be comfortable, you know, potentially taking it real slow with him. But, everybody else, I mean, there's a couple slot guys. I just think, you know, for me, I just devalue that position a little bit, I suppose, amongst other people. So for me, I would just be cautious, you know, thinking that, you know, a slot receiver getting him at 30 and him catching 90 balls for 800 yards is, you know, an awesome year. That's sure, that's a good year, but is that really, you know, him, or is that just the role in the offense? So, you know, if you're going to get a player, make sure he's a difference maker.
All righty, I'm going to kick this one off, and that's the likelihood that the Packers draft one with their 6 picks in the first 4 rounds. And I'm putting it at 75%, which I think a lot of people will think is low. Just in my opinion, I think the Packers have a shot here to address the wide receiver 2 position in their offense in free agency. A guy like a Golden Tate or a Jamison Crowder. Crowder, of course, would play the slot. But just in general, there are players that have become available that I think would be fine candidates to line up across from Davante Adams. The issue, I think, with that is if you sign one of those guys, then your young developmental wide receivers with the athletic ability that EQ and MVS and even Jamon have, these guys are just too talented to cut, basically, at this point. And you want to give them another shot, but at the same time, I just said 75%. So I would say if the Packers don't address the wide receiver position in the draft, in free agency, the number that I just said probably rises to about 90. But Gutekunst is a different guy than TT. He's a guy that is not terrified of free agency. And the old adage that I've pimped for a while now is you address needs in free agency and you address talent in the draft. And if wide receiver 2 is a need, go get some sort of free agent. Jacob, what do you think the likelihood is that the Packers draft one receiver within their first 6 picks, which would be rounds 1 through 4?
Yeah, I'll go 80%. I mean, you mentioned wide receiver 2, whether or not Goody thinks that's a need or not. Last year he was pursuing Allen Robinson and Sammy Watkins after already having, obviously, Randall Cobb and Davante Adams on board. They're rumored, take that rumor for what it's worth, to be involved in Antonio Brown's type stuff. That's probably more so because it's Antonio Brown instead of a wide receiver 2. But Gutekunst clearly believed, at least to me last year in free agency, that they needed another guy. Now, whether that means they should go sign a veteran type, you know, Ross, you've mentioned Golden Tate before. John Brown is a popular name amongst Packer fans. They probably should have signed him last year. But in the draft in general, seems to be the general way that this team is going to acquire players. That's going to be, even though Gutekunst is more active in free agency than Thompson ever was, that's going to be the case anyways. You know, Gutekunst said in his first press conference, that's the lifeblood of the franchise. And I think it's pretty high. You know, that doesn't necessarily mean you're giving up on guys like EQ and MVS and Jamon. It's just competition breeds excellence. And, you know, there's guys on this team right now, realistically, it's Davante Adams, and then a lot of unknowns. Geronimo Allison to me is a nice player. Aaron Rodgers clearly likes him, but he's somebody that you can very much look at as somebody that you can upgrade from. MVS and EQ, we've gone over. Jamon showed nothing during his rookie season. And Jay Kumerow, I know that's a popular story and all that sort of stuff, but he's probably just a guy, just a camp story that's great. And then the rest of the guys, there's not a whole lot there. So adding more weapons to the quarterback, especially later in his career, is never a bad idea. I think Gutekunst will see it the same way. And I also think that as somebody who looks at value, you know, we mentioned it, this receiver class is deep. And there's so many guys that we're probably going to be sitting on day, you know, the end of day two, looking at their third round pick if they haven't taken one yet, going, man, all those guys are still available. There's so many guys they could still have. So I think at some point in those first, you know, four rounds, it's going to be too much for Goody to pass up. So, yeah, I'm going to go 80%.
Cody, what are you thinking?
Yeah, it's got to be up there. I think that's where you're going to find the value for those guys. I think you're going to go – I'll go as high as 85%. I'd be surprised if they didn't. You're going to, you know, want to snag a guy in those rounds. There's upgradable spots all along the wide receiver core. No one's guaranteed a job other than Davante Adams, honestly. So it'll be a fun offseason to watch in general if they grab one. Another guy that it gets mentioned a lot is Tyrell Williams from the Chargers. He's a free agent, except I think he ended up like getting a lot of money. Just that's kind of how free agency goes for the wide receiver market in particular. But you know, again, the value is going to be in the probably in the middle round. So you know, within the first four picks, I think there's a high probability they find their value in a guy and grab one.
Yeah, and I think too in general, you know, man, if Geronimo Allison is your number two wide receiver, he's the other starting outside wide receiver, you better have a top flight tight end and a good slot receiver, just because the athletic limitations, they just don't allow for him to win one-on-one matchups over and over and over again. He's done great. He's maximized, I think, his athletic gifts just to make a roster and still be in the conversation as long into his career, as far along as he is in his career, I think he should be considered a tremendous success. But the idea that you can't upgrade over him is lunacy, frankly. It's just not at all realistic. That spot is something that I've mentioned should probably be addressed in free agency, but at the same time, it could be in the draft. This is a very, very deep draft, as Jacob mentioned. I think wide receiver 1 to like wide receiver 13 could all be solid number 2s, with really, I think, the only WR1, not lock, but because none of these guys are locks, but the only WR1 that I'd really be comfortable with would be DK. And I don't think Green Bay will be in a position to take DK, because I don't think they're going to do that kind of thing at 12. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you to Brad Kelly and the Draft Network for allowing Brad to spend some time with us. We very much appreciated his insights. Thank you, Cody and Jacob, for spending